On this episode of EFL Unfiltered, we're beside the seaside on this glorious day to visit a man with a staggering 45 years of experience and success as both manager and a player. It is, of course, Steve Bruce.
So, Steve, we find ourselves here beside the seaside, almost 1,000 games as a player, over 1,000 as a manager. This is your latest port of call. You enjoying your challenge here so far?
Well, I'm certainly enjoying the challenge and I've really enjoyed the honesty of it. I started in the lower divisions and strived to get there when I was a kid playing at Gillingham. So that maybe, who knows, I might finish here at the lower divisions, but I've certainly enjoyed it. And the call came at the right time for me. I'd been up missing for a couple of years and decided that really retirement, if that's the right word, wasn't really for me, you know. So it helps that David, I've known for a long time, David Downs, who's the sporting director. And of course, once I met the owner and shared his vision, he wants to take Blackpool to where they they want to be. And very, very decent chap as well to go with it. So why not? Let's have a go. As long as I still had the same enthusiasm. Of course, I cannot run around the training ground like I used to do. But I still enjoy the challenge of it day to day.
And the fit for you, are there certain things that are fundamentals and prerequisites that have to be in place before you say yes?
Well, I think it's just relationships, isn't it, with the owners, CEOs, whatever it is. And of course, you're both off the same page helps enormously. And of course, location helped me at all.
I suppose as an older manager, you take that into account because you've got firm roots.
You take to account. Gone are the days now where I'm going to go and rent an apartment and driving hundreds of miles and all the rest of it. I've done all that. I've done all that. And it was time to, keep my roots in the northwest. And it's a 55-minute drive into work, which is pretty normal.
I suppose that block of time, both in and out of work, is, I'd say it's where you get a chance to think, but I probably know for a fact that it's where you make all your phone calls. All you're doing is people constantly ringing you, whether it's managing up, managing down.
I mean, it's still full on. It's a little bit easier these days for a manager. You become a bit of the head coach when you've got sporting directors and things like that there. I mean, David today is working away on, you know, there's a couple left the club today and there's a couple come in the last 48 hours. Back in the day, the manager used to be the one who was running around. Them days are sort of done by other things, which is a nice part, actually.
When you come to a club and over that vast amount of time that we spoke about at the top, the games that you've managed, is there a tailor-made approach to each individual club? Is there a list of needs and necessities, right, Blackpool needs this and they've asked me to do this and I can provide this?
Well, I think they wanted a change in direction, I think, you know, from a different manager, a different perspective. You know, the days now, for example, when, you know, one of the biggest jobs I had was Newcastle. The thing about Newcastle, which is different to now when they see them, is my job was to just keep them in the Premier League. And it becomes very difficult. Anybody who's got a job like that at the lower end of the Premier League, the Premier League is fantastic, but when you're in the lower end, it's very, very difficult to keep yourself, because you beat yourself up when you get beat. And when you're down at the bottom of the Premier League and you've got Man City, Chelsea, Arsenal, Tottenham, Liverpool all on the horizon, it becomes, when are you going to win a game? So these lads at the bottom of the Premier League who manage down there, you know, I can go with them of how difficult it is here now at Blackpool. We want to try and get into the next division if we possibly can and towards the top end. So, you know, we've gone playing with two strikers, which is practically unheard of these days.
Bit of a throwback nowadays.
Throwback, dinosaur comes into mind. But I've always tried to play. Look, two strikers can be a 10 and a number 9. There is the terms for it. But I've always wanted to play two up top, and two wide players. So that's the way we've approached it. We haven't quite got the results what we needed to get to where we want to be. But let's hope the second half we can be a bit more consistent.
So given how long this managerial career has been so far, and I say so far because it doesn't look like it's going to end anytime soon, all the clubs, all the games, over 1,000 games, each place, each port of call has required something different. But I'm guessing that Newcastle United must be the one that's emotionally been a high point and the one that's been most tested.
It's a good way of putting it. certainly the high point in emotion. And look, I'm from Newcastle. So the thought of being able to manage Newcastle is every Geordie's dream, isn't it? So, and I've lived it. There's no doubt it was difficult. I'm delighted to see where they are now. And the supporters are now, I've got a team which is competing at the top end of the league, which they obviously demanded. Look, they were used to it for years with Shearers and Bobby Robsons and, you know, under Freddie Shepherd and that, you know, they were at the top end of the league trying to win titles. So, look, the idea to go, and I fail for the people of Sheffield, as I said, because I practically let them down, but I couldn't turn the opportunity down. During COVID as well, no real supporters. It was a tough gig. But the remit was to stay in the league.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's difficult. And I feel for these managers at the bottom end of the Premier League.
Yeah.
Week in and week out, you know, you're going to get beat and you've got to win a certain amount to stay up. Is pressure in itself.
A tough gig, but it sounds like not a tough sell. Was it a pretty short phone call?
It was easy. And Lee Charnley came out to see me in Portugal, and it was within hours, you know. And it was a very, very easy sell, even though I knew it was going to be difficult. I knew when you have people like Kenny Dalglish and Graeme Souness and Alan Shearer all telling you how difficult it's going to be, then I think you start to take notice. But maybe I was thick enough to take it.
But I'll never
regret it, that's for sure. And yes, it was difficult, and there's times when I thought it was practically impossible. You just do your best, get on with it. And my remit was to keep them in the Premier League, which we did.
Did they proffer that advice, or did you go looking for it with Kenny Dalglish, Graeme Souness?
No, they offered it. They offered it. I mean, Graeme said to me, listen, Steve, I managed in Liverpool, in Liverpool, Everton, and I've managed in Scotland, Glasgow. He says, I've even managed in Turkey, in Istanbul. and by the way, what you're going into is the most difficult of the lot.
Wow.
So I think you take notice of that. And by God, he wasn't wrong, man, I can tell you. He wasn't wrong.
I mean, so in that sense, given it was quite literally a dream job, did you enjoy it? Could you enjoy it?
There's times when I enjoyed it.
Yeah.
There's times when I enjoyed it, and I remember winning last game of the season against Fulham, and I think we got a penalty. We were winning 1-0, and I think Fab Shah got a penalty where we ended up winning 2-0, and that took us up like 3-4 places into 12th. So all of a sudden the season, you think, wow, 11th, 12th, we've done great. So look, for the people in and around the club who've worked tirelessly, the people who run the club, you know, Mike gets his fair share of criticism, Mike, actually, but he was straight as a die, and you knew where you stood with him. That's all you ask as a manager, you know, to give it you straight. And for all the people now who work in the club, who've worked tirelessly for years and years and years, then I'm delighted they're getting a little bit of a reward. And maybe, who knows, maybe this year they could win something.
You mentioned Mike Ashley, and I know, having spoken to you before, several years ago, before EFL games, and you talk, the big thing that you were talking about is how you manage a football club, and that means managing upwards, looking after the players, everyone on the same kind of level as you when it comes to the staff. Do you get to a stage in your managerial career where it's as important to pick an owner as it is a football club?
Well, you can't pick them because the opportunities come around, but what you want is a relationship.
Yeah.
If that relationship breaks, for example, at Hull, where I arguably had a really, really successful time, and the relationship I had with the owner then after, you know, his father passed away, unfortunately, when my relationship with him was fantastic, the son and I just didn't see on the same page. It was as simple as that. And that becomes then difficult, and that's ultimately why I left. It helps if you're in the manner. Look, management can be very, very difficult, especially in the Premier League, where so it's fantastic that you can have a relationship, and all you want really is honesty and a bit of help and a bit of support if you can. And in Mike, and you know, and I can say this now, I've been away for 2.5 years, you got all of them things. You know, you weren't going to get hundreds of millions to spend on your centre forward, but that's the way it was. So I knew the remit when I'm going in, and this is it, this is the way it is. That never changed, and as I said, you require a certain honesty.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it can only be healthy if the relationship between the manager and the CEO or chairman of director of football, chairman, owner, whatever you want to do, managing above
mm-hmm.
is always very, very difficult. And come you're better off having it than not having it, believe me.
It's quite pertinent that you mentioned Hull City, because we're talking about your career, and a big part of your career is getting clubs into the Premier League, which with Hull City you did, with Birmingham City you did. The ability to be able to do that, and again, given we're here on EFL Unfiltered and going through the playoffs, being able to watch something like that, being able to experience it from my point of view, to work and be in attendance, to be able to do it on the pitch must be absolutely wonderful.
Yeah, it's very enjoyable if you get there. With Aston Villa, of course.
Yeah.
I failed.
So you've had both sides of that Fulham.
The other side. Mm. 2 years, 3 years previous to that, we won at Wembley. Mm-hmm. A big Modi army scoring a wonder goal.
And the game was very straightforward. Hull City came down en masse, turned up, performed, scored the goal, and then went back off to East Yorkshire as Sheffield Wednesday there licking the wounds, weren't they?
Yeah, they were. And I realised the day what a support Sheffield Wednesday had as
huge,
well.
Huge
support. We had a good team.
Mm-hmm.
Look, it's all about the team we had, and we had a really good team. Unfortunately, it was my last game for Hull because of what we were just talking about.
Yeah.
The relationship had broken down with the owner. So it was, look, getting up through the playoffs is great.
Mm.
I would rather do it automatic, which is also difficult.
Yeah.
But I've experienced it twice now where we won on penalties with Birmingham. We beat Norwich on penalties.
That must be even...
That's even worse.
Nail-biting.
Of what riding on it.
I mean, yeah.
And I remember John Benson afterwards, after we got Birmingham promoted, went, "I don't know what you've done, Steve, and that, but I don't even think you know what's around the corner. Are we ready?" I said, "We'll be as ready as
you're gonna have to be.
We'll be as ready as we possibly can." But it's a nice way to do it. Mm. I have to say, whoever invented the playoffs, certainly, whoever decided that was the way forward was, a great thing.
There's moments of drama. I mean, because like you say, it's even more finite when you watch a penalty shootout in a play, because you've got nowhere to turn. So you've seen both sides of it. On the one side, it's kicks off the biggest party that a lot of people are ever going to experience. On the flip side, you've got a shortened summer before you've got to go again.
Yeah,
as potentially a favourite for the next season.
Absolutely. So you've got 3 weeks less to prepare, 4 weeks less to prepare. So you're not even thinking about it.
Yeah.
It's funny, you win the playoffs. So there was something in me which thought that we were going to go into penalties.
Mm.
And every day we trained at St Andrews on the ground, and we had the five penalty takers walk. Because you can practice penalties, but you don't practice the walk.
Yes.
And it's the walk that really messes with your mind, you know? And all the penalties, I knew where all of them were putting it. And Stern John was a penalty taker.
Yeah.
And he took the worst penalty of the lot, really. And that went in. So I thought, maybe. And then it fell to Darren Carter, who was 18.
Yeah.
Local boy, 18-year-old, comes and smashes
it. Makes me sweat thinking about it now.
Comes and takes the ball and smashes it. What took us there.
So, yeah,
fair play to him a long, long time ago, but fair play to him.
Did you, obviously, with your experience as a player, your input on taking penalties and saying, well, this is what I would have done.
By the way, I used to take penalties. But when you're in a penalty shootout, you stand at the halfway line, you get the ball, and that walk from the halfway line to the penalty spot is all this is.
Yeah. Must be lonely.
Am I putting it to the left or the right? Am I going to change? What's my stock penalty?
Yeah.
And all throughout, I tried to say to them in the week, listen, pick your spot.
Yeah.
Take practice it. Don't change.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever you do, don't change. And I knew all of them what they were going to do with it, and they successfully took them all.
Mentioning you as a player, and that's, I think, given how long your managerial career is, you get into that realms and the generational change where they forget that you actually play pretty well for a couple of pretty decent football clubs. You've described yourself as rampaging. And
not so sure about
and
that.
And an honest trier who made the most of limited natural ability. So the question for Steve Bruce, the manager, is would you have picked Steve Bruce to play it? And what would you have thought Steve Bruce to play?
Funny enough, I was just Stan Tennant, who was
my
chief scout at Hull for a long time. Mm-hmm. He's just come and had a coffee with me this morning. And he remembered about when we were signing Harry Maguire.
Yes.
And he was convinced, Stan, that Harry was for us. So we were in that particular moment in Hull, going for the young players. Mm-hmm. And Harry had played 150 times for Sheffield, captain of Sheffield. 3 years on the spin, he was player of the year. We'll have to go and see this kid. So off we go. And said, are we sure about his mobility, Stan? His left-hand side and all the rest of it, and this, that, and the other. So after a while, I kept going on and on about it. And we got in the car, and Stan goes to me his own, in his own way. By the way, can I tell you something, Steve? Listen, you couldn't run. And your left foot was very, 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 very average. You weren't very big. He says, and you did all right, didn't you? I'm telling you, the kid's player. So, yes, I didn't have any real natural ability apart from the ability of being able to turn up and roll my sleeves up and have a go. And I think playing with better players too. I mean, look, in football, how can you go from playing 250 times nearly for Gillingham and then in 3 years you're playing for Man United, one of the biggest clubs in the world, and 5 years later you're captaining it. It's just doesn't really happen, but it does because it's football. Mm. How many times have we seen it where you think, wow, all of a sudden, wow, he looks a player.
Yeah.
And I was fortunate to play with really, really top players alongside me and enjoyed every minute.
We'll get back to the conversation in just a few seconds, but I quickly wanted to tell you about the EFL's fantasy football game. Fantasy EFL lets you pick players from across the Championship, League One and League Two. There's unlimited transfers, it's quick and easy to play, and you can even set up mini-leagues with your mates. And with monthly prizes, it's never too late to sign up. Search Fantasy EFL in your app store and play today.
The Man United period, of course, you mentioned the sheer volume of games before you actually pitched up at Manchester United. There's been a wonderful documentary in recent months on Sir Alex Ferguson, and you don't have to look too closely to see a young Steve Bruce rampaging around the place, scoring some very, very important goals, but also the most important thing, which inherently is what history has proven, lifted a trophy that kicked off unprecedented success and possibly makes that club even bigger than what it was from then and what it is today. That sense of what that was, that achievement, and given the type of man that you are, very humble, very self-deprecating, that you were an absolute cornerstone of that particular success.
Well, to start with, when I first arrived in Manchester, we had to win the league and we had to topple the mighty Liverpool. And he was ferocious in his pursuit of them.
Yeah.
And he tested you to the limit every day.
Every single day
he tested you to the limit. He was quite relentless in what he wanted. And I think basically he managed on that. He had to be on his way, same wavelength as him. Mm-hmm. This hunger and desire to topple Liverpool, which we did in the end. Of course, now I've watched it from afar and see his ferocious pursuit now of Arsene Wenger then become the one that he's got to beat. Yeah. And then, of course, it was, thankfully, he wasn't around when Pep was around, but I knew the challenge would be that it was a special time in playing-wise. Mm-hmm. It was the best part of 10 years. By the time I was 31, hadn't won anything. Mm-hmm. By the time I was 36, I'd won 3 Premier Leagues, 3 FA Cups, 2 League Cups, a European Cup. It was mad. In a short period of time, it all just happened. And looking back on it, we got lucky in the draw in the FA Cup. We never played a team in our division, right? We were always away, but we never played a team, even in the semi-final.
Yeah.
We played Oldham in the semi-final, who weren't in our league. So you need a little bit of luck along the way, and that led to then, you know, the Cup Winners' Cup, where we beat the mighty Barcelona and Rotterdam. But the ultimate was to win the league. Mm. And the first year of the Premier League, how ironic it was, the first year of the Premier League for Manchester United to win it.
You mentioned the FA Cup and a goal and a games in the FA Cup. Obviously, Mark Robins scoring that famous goal at Forest. And Mark's another man that's had a extensive and successful career in football, he's done really well. If you pitch up against him in a game, obviously your minds are very much on the game. But is there that little look between the two of you to think that you've shared history?
Of course, and I've watched his career go by, and you know, you've talked about getting up in the playoffs. An Englishman seems to get in the Premier League. The vast majority of English lads have to take a team there.
Yeah, up their own accord.
And I've watched from afar the job that Mark's done and where he's been. He's done a great job everywhere he's gone and never really had the opportunity. Maybe he has, I don't know. Mm. But never had the opportunity to manage in the real big league in the Premier League, which is a shame for Mark because he's proved to be a very talented manager.
Just indulge me for a second, and that's one of your former teammates. That United side, and I don't say this to stress the fact that I'm a younger person than you are, because we're all inherently just on the same road, just at different juncture points, yes, aren't we? So my love of football into the late 80s, into the early 90s, and what the 90s was from that point of view, of seeing these huge football clubs take flight. I mean, Cantona, Robson, Ince, Sharp, Schmeichel, Irwin, Pallister, then the class of 92 comes along. You've got obviously Keane, Beckham, Neville's, or Scholes, all of those. From the outside looking in, it feels like a real kind of glorious era of those types of players. Obviously, the boss created a situation where that could happen. And the famous never win anything with kids came back to Hall and a set of Mr. Well, that was the, that's the standard that he set.
The 94 team was the best team I ever played in, and it was broken up within a year later. Ince and Kanchelskis and Hughes and Cantona and Schmeichel, like you say, and Parker and Dennis Irwin played for 13 years. Pally, every one of them in their own right could have been a cap. Mm. I mean, they were ferocious. And if people wanted to play a game of football, no problem, we'll take them on the game of football. They want to have a fight then. And back in the day, you used to have to fight. When you played Wimbledon and people like that, you had to be ready for a scrap, you know? The genius of Sir Alex, of the bringing the class of 92 into the equation, is what makes him a genius. Mm. Because, look, for the five of them to break into the team and play for a decade and and replace Ince, Kanchelskis, Hughes, they were big shoes to fill with kids, is a hugest call of the lot, which stands him above for me. And then he did it again.
Yeah.
He did it again with, you know, the 99 team, and he broke up that one in 2008, was it? Another one, you know, where he's created, and that was his strength, he's created some wonderful teams and he'll take some beating.
Does that example and seeing it at the kind of feet of the master for such a long period of time, does that create standards that you chase down as a manager, or does it create unrealistic expectations?
I think it sets you the standards of your work rate and your work rate at the job. He's burning enthusiasm for it, never wind. And no matter what time you went in the car park, the car was there. When we're talking about now, it's a little bit easier as management. He ran the lot.
Yeah.
He ran Manchester United with the chairman and the secretary, never away from the ground. Ferocious appetite for hard work. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what he instilled in all of us, that to get the rewards, you have to work harder, otherwise it doesn't come.
Do you think that in that case then, that you've, given the career that you've had, and as I said, 45 years, so you've straddled a couple of different generations there, your ability as a manager, your approach as a manager, I presume that's evolved with the times, always, with the players, with the personalities that you've got to come
across. And it has changed. It's changed from our day. Yeah. Of course it has. What you want, hang on a minute. So somebody just
seen
walk past. Somebody did walk past the...
That was amazing.
I thought somebody was coming here. Here's another one here cleaning. I don't know what they're doing. I don't know. Is the rat catcher or not? Or what? Okay, champs. We might go there again. Wow.
So given that ability to see Sir Alex Ferguson up close and personal, and obviously that's not taken into account the other managers that you play for and other ownerships that you've worked under, and given your span of managerial career, where we have seen a difference in the way that players respond to different methods and the way that they approach their profession, have you had to evolve, change with the times? Fundamentals still always be fundamental.
I think the biggest thing for anybody getting old is this dinosaur that lived in the past. Let's not forget, though, the dinosaurs ruled the world for hundreds of thousands of years, by the way. And, of course, you have your own beliefs when it has changed, and I think you need to evolve into it. Mm-hmm. Gone are the days where you can go screaming at people and all the rest of it and this, that and the other. I've always tried to manage that. I wouldn't ask a player to do anything that I wouldn't be able to do myself.
Yeah.
And try and treat them as fair as I possibly can. Mm-hmm. The difficulty now with managing, of course, which has never changed. And now it's a bit more different because we've got 25 players. Back in our day, we had one and two subs.
Yeah.
So that great team I just told you, 94, There was 15 of us, you know. Now there's 25. Uh-huh. So on a Saturday, you are leaving a lot of people behind.
It was a full team. It's not playing. Yeah,
absolutely. So, look, management in that part is that part has never changed.
Mm-hmm.
11 who are playing think you're wonderful. The other 11 think you're a pain in the arse. So, that's never changed.
The you say about the way you can approach players, the universal take on you as a person, and the man that I've met several times is someone that's got a lot of time for people, someone that's very gracious and empathetic, and just a good bloke. And I'm not saying that just because you sat in, you're giving us your time, but that's the universal take. So does that then mean that you've got? Do you have that the other gear? Because you must have another gear in the dressing room.
I'm sure people will tell you that I have. It doesn't happen very often, but as Sir Alex says, there's nothing wrong with losing your temper as long as it's for the right reason. Which is a bit strange, but
that justifies everything.
As I said to you, I think the biggest thing now, and it is mainly man management, has come into the equation, maybe bigger than what it was. Mm-hmm. And I think that's vitally important. These lads now have to put up with a lot, especially at elite level.
Yeah.
They have to put up with a lot with social media. And unfortunately, all the young people read it. You try and say to them, by the way, stay off it. But I've seen it far too often where even after a game,
they're
looking in their pockets and the first thing they're looking is probably social media. How did I do? How did I play? What they're saying about me out there. Mm-hmm. And that's in the equation now. Very difficult to deal with. So my advice to them is don't read it, but of course to take no notice and do.
Just to kind of knit together the playing side of it, because again, it staggers me, because you hit the ground running, as you say, with regards to the number of games that you had before you got to United, then you hit the ground running once you become a manager, because there's no resting up at all, is there?
And that came as a bit of a shock. I was all geared up to, when I was finished playing, to go into soccer schools.
Yeah.
And Honda at the time were very kindly going to sponsor me. And my thought was, I'm going to go to inner city areas who couldn't afford to go on coaching courses. Yeah. And that was the route I was going to go. Then all of a sudden I got a phone call from Sheffield, would I be interested, player manager? Now that is practically impossible, player manager. But anyway, I took it on and off I went.
Yeah.
But I found it, Dave, I found it very difficult when I was young. And I was a lot more hot-headed and bad-tempered, if you like.
Impulsive.
And I couldn't get with the idea that, you know, what management was like, that so many people weren't telling you the truth. You know, I've said it many times. I remember holding the scarf, you know, with that great picture when you hold the scarf at Sheffield United. And I was trying to buy Kit Simons for nothing. I said, oh, you'd be a good free transfer, Kit. The chief executive, nobody taught you, Steve. I'd only been in the door half an hour. Nobody told you, we need some money by the weekend, by the way, otherwise we're in trouble. Nobody told me that. And that was the introduction, welcome to management. And I remember ringing Sir Alex, saying, what do we do here? He says, well, you either go now, and you've been in the job half an hour, or you know that you've got no money and you get on with it. So I thought, well, do you know what it is? I'll get on with it. I know I've got no money, so let's get on with it. We've got a decent enough squad, and let's see if I can make a fist of it.
Welcome to the madhouse then, 25 years
ago. Welcome to the madhouse, 25. And that was my introduction to it. And early days, I needed Birmingham, really, where I'd played for 2 years. And I think that probably helped me with the owners anyway, that I needed somewhere that I could go and put my own stamp on it and go and work for a period of time. And, you know, nearly 7 years, I think I was there.
Steve, do you have a managing high point in your career that you can instantly go back to now is the best time?
Do you know, in their own way, listen, you've mentioned it three times in your 45 years. How lucky am I, yeah? How lucky have I been to being at the whatever level to be involved with football, give me an escape out of where I was, has been very, very good to me. You mentioned Newcastle, arguably, Aston Villa. Mm-hmm. I took Aston Villa, and the reason why probably I get it is because they're in the Championship and where they are now.
Mm-hmm.
The four years at Hull really was 6-7 years at Birmingham. It's very difficult to to really put your finger on one, you know, but probably Birmingham because I was there longest.
Yeah.
And I had 2 years as a player and 7 as a manager. So out of them 4 years, 10 years. And I'm delighted to see them on the march again, which is great. I've thoroughly enjoyed the lot. My best team, which people are going to find, was my team at Wigan.
Yeah.
Where I had the likes of Heskey and Palacios and Valencia and Roda Jaeger and Ayer Roof.
What a team that
is. Well, yeah. Lee Cattermole, yeah, Paul Sharner,
yeah,
Chris Kirkland. I had a team where could go anywhere and take anybody on.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, the big clubs come and took Palacios and Tottenham. Then Valencia went to Man U and Heskey went to Villa. And unfortunately, it was dismantled before it got really going again. But that was arguably the best team I ever managed.
From the point of view of the experience that you've got, this is a bit of a double-edged question. So do young coaches ask your advice? Because throw into that a young coach that you know very well from a nipper, it'd be an Alex. I mean, that's advice as an older, experienced man to a younger coach, and also as father to son, isn't it?
I sometimes question the younger ones going in. Look, I had a difficult management to start with until I met somebody with grey hair and John Benson, who used to say to me, Steve, calm down, concentrate for Saturday, make sure you're ready for Saturday. He simplified me because he said, all of us rely on you getting a result on Saturday. And sometimes a young coach can, yes, have your beliefs with it. But I believe a lot of the young coaches should maybe go for somebody a bit experienced to help you, who's been there, done it, wore the T-shirt, can steer you through, because it is a very, very difficult, lonely job at times, especially for the people who are young. I remember how difficult it was for me in my younger years. Mm-hmm. As I said, Benno helped me enormously.
You mentioned Benno then. Would he be the man that gave you the best advice in your career?
Yes, without question. Yeah. And I bumped into him at Wigan. You know, he knocked on my door to see would I be interested to come to Wigan. And he was director of football, wherever he was then. And I took him with him. We went to Birmingham and took him with him. And he's not with us anymore now these days. But unbelievable advice he gave me. Unbelievable advice. And very, very simple and straightforward.
What do you love most about the job, and has that changed at all over the years?
Football.
Just literally the game of what football is.
What the game of football. You know, my good lady back at home even last night was just tutting and shook her head when I put the football on. And then, of course, you scan, don't you? You scan, you don't just concentrate in one. You scan through them all. Football has been, I've enjoyed it. It's been the biggest part of my life, probably, hasn't it? And as I said, how lucky have I been?
I suppose it given what it's given you as well as a person, as a family man, as a father, as a grandpa, everything that comes with that.
Everything that comes with it has been through football. And I remember doing a week in the shipyards in the middle of February in Newcastle and thought, there is no way. There was 35,000 men working in the shipyards at that particular time. And wow, to go and work there, I thought, I only did a week, and I thought, I've got to find something else rather than work in the shipyards. Thankfully, I kicked the ball, headed the ball.
It always happened with the head.
I could head the ball, which helped me.
It's a fascinating to just think that week was so formative in the sense that it set you off on this trajectory. You pick it up as a game because it's fun.
Yeah.
Is it still? But you mentioned being here with Steve Agnew that you've worked with in several places. You don't know Agnew for age. Do you still sit and have a little laugh about outfits and bobs?
And it's all geared really to winning on a Saturday, isn't it? And there's nothing quite like preparing a team. I think in management, if you're the number one in the head coach or manager, wherever you are, and you win on a Saturday, you take a bigger satisfaction than you probably are as a player because you've picked the right team, your tactics have worked, you've worked on something all week maybe, and it all revolves around the result on a Saturday. And basically, that's where it is. It's winning on a Saturday. Otherwise,
it's knowing everybody that works here as well.
Oh, he's not back again, is he? Jesus. What's he working at? Why the idea of me? Yeah, clean the windows.
They're just committing that.
Walking back and forward. He doesn't know where we're talking about here.
It's little daft things like that. So given
the fact there is more, there is important.
Yeah.
The groundsman as they are anybody else. And I've inherited a couple here where they're typical, you know, they're typical Birrabanda. A part of it. A part of what makes the football club has always been the groundsman, and they do a grand job. You've seen the work they did last week and the game got called off.
Yeah.
They're all getting up in the middle of the night to shift the lights and things like that. Incredible.
What's the key thing with you, though, and just to round off in the sense of keeping everybody together? You just turned 64. There's no sign of slowing down. You mentioned about being away from football club for a little period of time.
Yep.
And what the word retirement can feel like, can look like, and you've experienced a kind of variation of that. Yep. You're not slowing down, are you, anytime soon?
No, I quite enjoy... This morning I was up at 6 o'clock. I quite enjoy of what I do. So listen, there's going to be a time when you think, Steve, enough's enough. Where, but at this particular moment, all I'm wanting to do is get the club where it wants to get to. They've been brave enough to appoint me because there's not many 60-year-olds working anymore. Mm. Back in the day, there used to be, and let's not forget, arguably the best one, Angelotti's my age. Mm-hmm. So if he's keeping on going, that keeps all us old ones. And Moisey getting another job in the big league. Terrific.
And finally, I mean, I've mentioned 45 years a few times. Getting to 50, there's no ego with you, Steve, but getting to 50, that would be some achievement, wouldn't it? 50 years in the game.
Can I see it? Who knows? Mm-hmm. Who knows? As long as I've still got the same enthusiasm and I've got the ability to go out in the training ground, which I still enjoy to this day, there's nothing, even on a, it's a great day, to a glorious day, but even
beautiful,
a cold, wet day is still nothing like putting your coat on and watching the training, watching and taking the training is terrific.
We can see it in your face. And just from our point of view, being able to come in and chat to you about it. Anytime I've bumped into you, you've always been lovely and gracious and very kind of honest with us. But today has just been a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thanks for coming.